There had been very little testing on the car. It wasn't a thoroughly, it was, they built three prototypes really, and we're not really ready.
Three drivable prototypes.
Drivable prototypes, yeah. And they still have them.
Do they still exist?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have one?
Oh, no.
No. Would you want to have one?
Well, they're worth too much money, really.
Right.
You know, they.
Yeah.
He lost a lot of money on it. It's too bad, but it was, and I don't want to criticize Dick. He meant well, and it was. He had a restoration shop where he restored cars for himself, and. He knew that end of the business, but he thought we could build production cars, and we can't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always strong to get some outside company to build the whole car for us, but I never was able to convince him that was the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of finally wound up with a product which we displayed with a price of $135,000 for a Corvette.
Mm-hmm. Basically a Corvette.
And there was a man in Florida, by the name of Phillips, who built a car very similar to it, starting with a Corvette, and going through the same process that we did. And the only difference between his car and ours was that mine was an original design and his was an imitation Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to sell that at $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold a lot of them at 60,000.
Did he? Mm-hmm. What do you think of the custom car market in recent years? Say things like the McLaren, the personal custom cars. Have you watched those fairly closely?
Not too well. No. There's a
or the Bricklin.
There's a company in Florida. That I visited last year. That's building a car, and they're quite successful. I can't remember the Zimmer, I think.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Is. And this Mr. Zimmer is a pretty smart automobile man. I mean, when we left there, I told my wife, I said, I think there's another E.L. Cord.
Mm-hmm.
He's a brilliant man, and he's. I don't like his car particularly well. It's too. Garish, and I don't like cars that are overdone with too much chrome and too much imitation outside exhaust pipes and things of that sort, which are rather sickening.
Simply gingerbread.
Yeah, that type of thing. But he's doing all right with it. He's selling it.
What do you think of these rather extravagant things like the Excalibur and other? That
well, that's Brooks Stevens. He's done real well with that.
Has he?
Yeah, Brooks has done, and it's a quality product. He's done a good job. He has, I think his sons, a couple of sons that run that business now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they've done very well.
Have they? Mm-hmm. Then there are people locally, like Bill Schmidt, who takes. I think he takes.
Cadillacs, yeah.
Extends them, and
yeah, I've seen that.
And
I don't know how well Bill's done with that. He's he's just down the street here, and I know of one that he sold in Detroit. I don't know others.
Other than the Buick, have you been involved personally with any other design operations in the last 10 years or so?
No, I've been a consultant to Franklin Mint for the last couple of years.
Oh, really? That must have been fun.
Yeah, that's
working on their series of antique car models.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. It's been a nice association.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really the only consulting work I'm doing at the present time.
Mm-hmm. From a perspective of roughly about 60 years in the business. If I were to ask you what your design philosophy is over the long haul, what could you characterize that without too much difficulty?
Well, I think that this old cliche of form follows function is my theory of design. I mean, I follow that, but you've got to analyze function. And if you are beholden to a wind tunnel, then you have to figure that the function of the car is just to make something that goes through the air with the least amount of resistance. But that's not really the whole function of an automobile. I think that if you want to design form to follow function, then the first function, that the most important function, is to design something that people are going to buy. And it's got to have style, it's got to have some artistic characteristics about it that is going to make somebody want to buy it over competition. And another function of the car is it's got to carry people in comfort from point A to point B. And the function of things in the car, the instrument panel and the steering wheel, and everything should be comfortable for the driver, and no mysteries about it. So there's a lot of functions other than just pushing that thing through the air. And so I think it's wrong to sacrifice anything just for aerodynamics. Aerodynamics are important, but they have to be given their proper balance of importance.
Do you get the impression that the aerodynamics concept, obviously not a new one in automotive design, was a sort of a happenstance because of the fuel crunch of the mid-70s?
Partly, yes.
Yeah.
See, the problem, when the government's the big problem, they came through with this CAFE ruling where they had to produce all of their cars had to have an average gas consumption. And this gas consumption was higher than the cars they were producing by quite a bit. So the companies were forced to build cars that would get more miles per gallon. And there's only certain things you can do to make a car run farther on a gallon of gasoline. You can make it smaller, you can make it lighter, and you can maybe improve the efficiency of the engine and the driveline, and you may be able to improve the tires, or you can give it an aerodynamic shape. But what the companies did, they did all these things. They made them smaller, they made them lighter, they did all these things, but from a merchandising standpoint, the one thing they decided was something they could sell was aerodynamics. They couldn't come out and advertise, look, we made the car 2 feet shorter and 6 inches narrower and 500 pounds lighter. That wouldn't sell. But they did all these things, but then they came out and made a lot of noise about aerodynamics, which is legitimate in that respect, and that the aerodynamics help improve the gas mileage, but also making the car smaller and all these other things also help improve the gas mileage.
So the coefficient of drag becomes the magic the word.
It's the one thing they could merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
The advertising people could do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's happened, I think, is that they've gone a little bit overboard and given the aerodynamics more importance than they should.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to have to get away from that. Otherwise, everything's going to look alike.
Mm-hmm. You touched upon an important point in terms of driver comfort. They've finally codified that under a fancy term called ergonomics.
Yeah.
But it really goes back to the old sense of pleasing the driver and making it easy for him to drive and convenient for him to drive.
I remember back, you know who Oscar is? Oscar's the dummy?
Yes.
Well, in the development of the dummy, this is interesting. Many years ago, and this was a subject that we took up in Society of Automotive Engineers, And there was a professor from, I think his name was Lay, from University of Michigan, who was head of the automotive engineering at the University of Michigan. He was on our committee. Fred Mathai and, oh, I don't remember who all, but anyway, Rudy Schonitzer, and I was a member of the committee, and so we were developing this dummy, this Oscar. Mm-hmm. And the data that we had went back to the, I think it was the German-Prussian War, and this is the days of Napoleon, and armies traveled overland, and they not only traveled overland, they had to carry all their equipment with them. Not only a gun, but they had a knapsack and they had a whole bunch of stuff. And in typical German fashion, they took a scientific approach to it. They took dead soldiers and froze them and cut them up and weighed all the parts. And by doing this, they were able to design the equipment that a man had to carry so that he would travel farther in a day and still be alive if he didn't get shot. So anyway, this is where we got the data for Oscar.
Ah, that's marvelous.
Another thing that's funny, that goes way back, for many, many years, in fact, back during the classic era, the standard wheel track was 56 inches. Mm-hmm. And that was the width of streetcar tracks too. You could ride on streetcar tracks in those. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting where that 56 inches came from. It goes back to the Roman days, and in Rome, the travel was by chariot, and the width of two horses fastened up to a chariot, mm-hmm. between their backbones, it was 56 inches between the backbone of one horse and the backbone of another. Then the horses would travel and the wheels would follow in the path made by the horse's hoofs. So the wheel track on the old chariots were what was carried over and still is being used today.
That's very good. Well, on the whole, you've had a happy and productive career, I suspect.
I've had a lot of fun. I never made any money, but I've had a lot of fun.
Isn't that the main thing?
Yeah.
You've made some contributions, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're keeping your hand in with your interest in automobiles and occasional consulting.
I don't lose interest in cars, that's for sure. No,
well, thank you, Mr. Burey. Very helpful.